much for being with us. And tell us what you know about this whole question of vaccine shedding. Do unvaccinated people have something to be concerned about when it comes to being with vaccinated people?
Well, it sure looks like it. I mean, you know, they used to tell us in medical school to listen to patients. Now they're telling us, and especially listen to mothers, now they're telling us, oh, no, don't listen to that. Just, we know what's right. You know, you can't possibly know the truth. But really, if you listen to what people are saying, they're very compelling stories. And that's what the point is. This isn't something we're making up. It's where doctors and people talk to us. So a person is unvaccinated, goes to work in a in an office where everybody else around them is vaccinated. The first story I heard was that they just kept getting a flu-like illness. And I thought at the time, like you, I thought, I don't know how this could be shedding anything or transmitting anything. I talked to Judy Mikovits, and she said, no, but it might be that the vaccine is activating latent viruses in the bodies of the recipients, and that they're shedding that. And so they're immune to it, but this person's constantly bombarded with these viruses are being activated. And that was my first thought, and that's what I kind of passed on. But then we started to see the bleeding. Now, about the same time that this started being reporting, I was actually, I was struck by that doctor down in Florida that died of the hemorrhage to the brain who died with zero platelets. I mean, this is not something to see. And one of the points about VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, is you're supposed to look at unusual events and recognize unusual patterns. Well, we're seeing that, but they're not paying attention to it. They're not doing anything with that data. So I pulled all the data with some help. And I looked at all these cases of sudden bleeding, lots of vaginal bleeding, miscarriages, lots of bleeding in postmenopausal women that took the vaccine and start bleeding, hadn't bled in years. And then we have the blood clots. And there's just a lot of stuff, little simple things that just kind of they make you kind of perk your ears up and say, what's going on? People that can't stop the bleeding from the injection site. I've given lots of injections over my years, as many nurses have, and I've never seen this, where you might bleed for 3 hours from a little injection site. Are you kidding me? So something is happening. That's number one. And it has to do with bleeding. The second thing is now we're having all these cases, and I literally had three in a day. One was I was on a radio show with someone, postmenopausal woman reporter, and three guys in her office got vaccinated, and she started bleeding that day. Now, I didn't get it, but again, I wasn't at her side. It was a small area, and she'd been there for a few days. It's been going on. Another one was a small child that was in a house of unvaccinated people, went over, spent the day with a neighbor. And the neighbors had recently been vaccinated. Kids come, gets home, gets sick, has nodes pop up in the neck. Again, none of these are kind of very consistent all at first. And then you start hearing of little girls starting to bleed. They haven't had their menarche. They haven't started having normal menstrual periods. And they're starting to bleeding when they're around vaccinated people. They've not been vaccinated. A pregnant wife, friend of mine, second trimester, which is not when you usually have problems and lose babies. She's been doing fine. School teacher goes back to work around vaccinated people, starts having bleeding and cramping, you know, comes home and it stops and we stop it. But, you know, that's what I'm saying. It was over and over. And you're seeing it's particularly women, but we've also had reports now of men having scrotal rashes, testicular pain. Something is going on. These are unvaccinated people, and they're showing the same kind of things that we're seeing in vaccinated people to a lesser degree. It's more focused on the vaginal bleeding, okay? So what's going on? And just kind of flu-like illness. Now, here's the clincher. One of my friends who's an orthopedic surgeon, he has a buddy, older person, took the vaccine because he lives with his elderly mother, thinking they're both of them have been fine, but he thought he would take the J&J vaccine as a protection for her. He gets sick for 3 days and she dies of COVID. She hasn't been anywhere except around him. Okay. You hear these stories, they're hard to talk away. And that's what we're trained as physicians to listen to histories and understand what they mean. You know, that is what we're supposed to do. And I'm telling you something is happening here. So when we think about this, one of the things that struck me is when I look at the past, when somebody mentioned the term, and I can't remember where I first heard it, somebody mentioned the term self-disseminating vaccines, even I in my suspicious mind did not anticipate that we'd actually been developing vaccines that could be given to other people. Well, they claim it was for animals, okay? But I went back in, and I'm going to tell you, there's a long, sad history of trying to get vaccines to depopulate certain populations. In 1947, there was a guy named Burnett, Sir McFarlane Burnett. He was knighted. He was a Nobel laureate. But he tried to convince the Australian government to work on bioweapons to cut down on the overpopulation of Southeast Asia that could be a threat to Australia. The big one, and there's a lot goes along with this about whether or not we really have emerging infectious diseases, which is the reason for this whole process. But in South Africa, we know that probably with U.S. help, Dr. Wouton Basson, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, but he was part of the 7th Med Battalion of the South African Defense Force. And during the period of time from between 1981 and 1994, it was called Project Coast. And I just tell your listeners to look at it themselves. He basically was working on racial-specific biobombs, okay, against the black population. They did multiple things. There was a guy from Los Angeles, Larry Ford, who was an OBGYN doctor, who would show up in South Africa with these pathogens, and he taught them how to make tactile bioweapons so that you contaminate an area and transmit it. But here's the kicker that I found. By 2015, again in Australia, interestingly, they claim that there's an overpopulation of certain mouse species that's carrying some virus that might infect humans. This is theoretical might infect humans, by the way. You know, the whole argument for a lot of this self-disseminating vaccines was convincing us we had epidemic emerging infectious diseases coming out of deepest Congo and places like this. But it turns out that all that started happening about the time that Walter Busson was in South Africa doing this bioweapons research, probably offshored from other places. So I'm a little skeptical about what's happening. But the bottom line here is they have a self-disseminating process. When you look at what they use for animals, to get rid of the mouse population, they developed vaccines that would go in, and it's I won't go into all the details. But when you read these scientific papers, it duplicates what SARS-CoV-2, what we're learning about the spike protein of SARS-CoV-2 and this whole thing. It's in a fairly benign virus, the coronavirus, theoretically, an adenovirus vector, a diminished adenovirus vector used in the Johnson & Johnson, for example, in the AstraZeneca. How they've created these in animals is how they've created these in us. And they went out to the mice, and they know that they can't just vaccinate a few mice, that won't work. You have to have them shed to other mice to sterilize a population. So they give them a vaccine that they will give off in their secretions, okay, breast milk and other bodily secretions. They bump up against other mice, it gets on them, and then they get infected with this. They create it, and it goes down two or three passes. After that, it stops. So they don't want to kill, I guess, all the mice because that's not biologically good, but they want to diminish the population so it doesn't spread disease. So they've timed it so these things kind of fizzle out after a while. And the way that these things worked in the mice, they destroyed the female ovaries. That's what they did. Now, I'm sorry, I can't – and if you look at in 2021, in February of 2021, the NIH is just running a study to look at – what do they call it? I've got it right here. Well, they're doing a study to look at whether or not ovaries, what do they call it? It's like ovarian reserve. That's it. They're looking at vaccinated and unvaccinated people as a result of these vaccines, these so-called vaccines, which are really experimental, unauthorized genetic agents, if we're going to call them what they are. They're looking purposely to see what's happening to women's ovaries. Why are they doing that? In other words, I think they know a lot more than they're telling us, and it's a widespread problem. People are very concerned about it. They should be upfront about it. The other thing to say is that we now know that this spike protein itself, in fact, not the whole spike protein, but a S1 subunit of the spike protein, can reproduce all the symptoms of COVID. You don't even need a coronavirus. So if you notice that one of the big controversies going on right now is why can we not isolate the virus? Where's the isolate? Why can't CDC give us an isolate? We hear this lab guy in California saying, hey, you know, we tested all this virus or we tested all these samples coming out of people's lungs that presumably were dying of COVID or had COVID, and we can't find anything but influenza A and influenza B. Okay? So just as a food for thought, here's a possibility. There never was a viral outbreak. It was a bioweapon release of a spike protein or a subunit of the spike protein that could be passed on tactilely, like could be spread in an area, maybe aerosolized, but spread in an area. Think Wuhan, Lombardy, and New York City. Because have we seen it spread any? If it really were spread like they told us it was spread by airborne, why did we not see other cities go down? We didn't do lockdowns until it was already diminishing. So that doesn't explain what's going on. There's a lot of there are more unknowns than knowns if you look at it from the perspective of just a standard viral outbreak with an unusual virus. But if you look at it as a bioweapons attack at three cities, maybe New York, maybe not, but at least looked like Lombardy and Wuhan for sure, and I think New York too. You might have sprayed this stuff around, and then a few generations pass it down. You pass it through, maybe two or three pass it through humans, and then what do you see? We see a standard flu season curve. It all was coming down. There was nothing going on. It was really coming down. In Israel, for example, it was coming down to almost no deaths, and then they started the vaccine program. Now, what's the vaccine program? They're literally giving you the genetic material to build this spike protein in your body, in all sorts of cells. It goes everywhere. It doesn't just sit in your arm. It goes all over. And it produces the actual pathogen in your system. And then it can potentially, apparently, shed. That's the part we have. I don't quite know how it gets from there to you, but here's a story that's hard to talk away. With this, I pulled all the various studies on all these bleedings, and there were 104 cases of thrombocytopenia, this rare disorder, right? Not something, and what we call thrombocytopenia in medicine is not this. This is killing people in spite of aggressive medical treatment, which that doesn't generally happen in the real disease. So a one-month-old baby is breastfeeding. Mother takes the second dose of the Pfizer vaccine. The baby dies at 1 month of thrombocytopenia. That alone should have caused a stoppage of this, in my opinion, because you can't just talk that one away. What happened there? I hope they're very seriously looking at that. So again, kind of sounds like the mice. They knew it passed down in the mice breast milk, right? That secondary pass. I personally think this is looking like it was programmed to do this. I'm just going to come out and say it. And I have to say I'm not the only one that's coming to this. Michael Yaden, former chief science advisor from Pfizer. What did he say recently? You know, I remember talking to you a long time ago on our first interview, and I said, These smart guys like Fauci and all these smart people in the universities, they can't all have been wrong about everything on accident. That just doesn't happen. Well, now I hear Michael Yaden say, just look out your window and ask yourself, why is the government lying to you about even simple things? And he says the answer is they're trying to kill you and your children. They're coming after you and your family. And that's Michael Yaden, former science officer of Pfizer, not a lightweight.
Yeah, so, no, that's all terrifying.
So it's looking like...
Yeah, you know, one of the things that came to mind while you were talking is we reported at the New American probably 6 or 7 years ago now, every single bishop in Kenya, every single Catholic bishop in Kenya reported on some results of some vaccines that they had sent to laboratories all over the world. Every single one, it seems, and this was even published in some scientific literature, was laced with beta-HCG, human chorionic gonadotropin, and every single bishop in the entire nation of Kenya said, guys, this is a covert sterilization program. This is not a tetanus vaccination program. Stop taking these shots. So it really did. And actually, that was 1 year after the UN Population Fund had come out and said that Kenyan women were having way too many babies and that we needed to stop them from producing, I think it was 4.1 or 4.2 babies per woman. We needed to bring the population down. And, of course, Bill Gates funded this World Health Organization vaccine program that ended up being exposed as a sterilization program. They also said that they had seen similar things in Nicaragua and the Philippines. So something very fishy is going on. I want to ask about Fauci. You know, he's been in the news a lot lately because Rand Paul finally dropped the bomb. We've been reporting on this for a while. But Rand Paul finally dropped this in open congressional session. He said that he asked him about the gain of function research that he had been financing in China, in Wuhan, and other places. Another thing that just came out in Congress was that Fauci admitted that less than 60%, maybe as few as 50% of his employees actually took the COVID shot. This was just a few days ago in testimony from a question from Senator Burr. And yet now they're recommending this for children ages 12 to 15. What do we make of this, and what are some good next steps? I mean, should Congress be holding hearings? Do we need a special prosecutor? What do we do here?
Well, I mean, the first thing to say is the simplest, and that is there is no ethical world that it is right to vaccinate children that don't die or get really sick with this disease. Worldwide, the death of children, I mean, you're less a chance of your child dying of COVID than of getting hit by lightning. That was out of Oxford University. 1.9 million children plus, over 1.9 million children in Sweden last year didn't wear a mask, didn't social distance, went to school, didn't miss a day, and not one died. So on what immoral basis they can come up with, that is, there is no justification anywhere to vaccinate them. Now, having said that, there hasn't been a justification for vaccinating children against mumps for the very same reason. But the mumps vaccine didn't appear to be killing people like this is. This is even worse because there's young people dying from this. There's no question. And I looked 10 years in VAERS. I went back to 2009 to 2019. There were about 1,500 deaths. We all total for 10 years, there were 1,500 deaths reported to the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. We almost have 4,000 in 4.5 months of the COVID. It's 97% COVID in VAERS. So there's something really bad. And to send this to our children is just criminally immoral and should be prosecuted. It violates everything, and it violates the Nuremberg principles. But the issue about Dr. Fauci, and I just, not to say I told you so, but I did try to write this up. I had this in February of 2020. I wrote up a timeline. I showed where this came from. I sent it to Epoch Times. I sent it around to multiple magazines and stuff. Got no traction. Nobody was ever – it was like a hot potato. Nobody wanted to touch it. But now it's coming out because truth always comes out. And it's the fact is that we know that Dr. Fauci funded – they're talking about Wuhan right now. But let's talk about Ralph Baric. This whole thing started – he gave $10 million from NIAID to Ralph Baric in North Carolina. He's Mr. Bat Coronavirus. And he talked on his site when I looked at it in February how he was going to basically mix it with different viruses. He's going to look at it. He was talking about upregulation. Okay. And then maybe somebody, this is now speculation, I can't say this, but maybe somebody tapped Fauci on the shoulder and said, hey, you can't fund him. That's illegal because we've made that illegal. So they gave, so Fauci and the guys at the NIH agreed to give Ralph Baric a pass because he had theoretically started his research before the ban was put on gain of function research. Okay. So gain of function research is just simply you take a native wild virus that doesn't hurt anybody and you upregulate it to make it deadly to humans. That's a bad thing. Well, and this was also, by the way, concomitantly going on in Winnipeg at the only level 4 bioweapons lab in Canada at Winnipeg. And Dr. Xi, who was a Canadian, I mean, who was not Canadian, she was a Chinese People's Liberation Army researcher, was working with Frank Plummer in that lab. And he brought some specimen back in 2012. This has been going on for a long time. And they had been working on it for a long time up there, too. So this didn't just start recently. Well, when this whole thing, when Tony Fauci was told, hey, by the way, that's illegal, I think he offshored it. I think this is what we saw with Walter Busson in Africa, that it was probably not him that started this program. It was he offshored somebody else's program that didn't want it on their shores, like our people or somebody's people, the British, who knows. And then, you know, so we sent them. Then Fauci made a – there was a grant, and it was $7 million total to Chinese – research on bats. And he claims he didn't send it to the Wuhan lab, but it was sent, the first half of it, 3.74 million or something, was sent for work on wild coronaviruses. But it was out of the people, it was the same virologists that are working in the Wuhan lab. Come on now. And then in 2019, the second half of that grant went to upgrade the Wuhan lab for continue this research. So he's just lying through his teeth. I mean, that happened, and people can look at that. So there's a lot of blame to go around. And I don't think there's so much more that we can talk about, but that, you know, Frank, the other thing I will tell you, it's just unbelievable that the lab person that worked with Frank Plummer in 2019 was caught sending back some specimens to China, and the virology community got all excited about that, and it was investigated, and all that happened, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police came to the lab and escorted her and her husband out. No investigation, no sentencing, nothing. And so then they go back to China, and I don't know if we've ever heard from them since. But in any case, they're out of where we can investigate them. And then Frank Plummer, who actually is at the heart of this too, who was down in Africa giving a speech in February of 2020. He's my age. He's in good health. He suddenly he drops over of a heart attack. Okay, he can't be reached. I think there's another guy in the Winnipeg lab that's missing. I mean, you can't. In other words, somebody's cut their trail. There's something bad going on here, and I think the role of Fauci. Since I talked to you last, I've come up with this conclusion. Fauci is not. It's not his money that put into this. Obviously, he's. You know, I remember, like I say, I fell asleep in front of him when I was an intern in 1981. So this guy, 1980, this guy came to the NIH and he became the chair of the NIAID like in 84 or something. So he didn't come with money. He's got money now, but not at the rate that this has been sucking up the dollars. He's the bag man in the mafia term. He's the bag man. He's the guy that the Gates Foundation, maybe the Rockefeller Foundation, various different foundations all fund their money into this central guy. And what Dr. Fauci has done, he has bought obedience, essentially, by, you know, it's like the mob guy, the bag man, takes care of the capos. I think I got the right term right. Anyway, the capos are the guys that actually carry out the gambling stuff and whatever. And if they don't pay, and he sends out not his own money, but the mob boss's money to take care of them as needed. And then they are supposed to do their things, or he goes out and roughs them up a bit, or tells them, or withdraws the money, which is kind of what's happening. If you have a university program now, you've become dependent on the $800 billion that's crossed Dr. Fauci's desk since he became the chair in 1984. $500 billion for HIV research alone that he can also give to people like Governor Cuomo or whatever, you know, to keep the governors in line. And I'd like to see if all the five governors that made hydroxychloroquine illegal got special funds from the NIH HIV fund. Somebody should look into that. I'm not good with running money dollars, but that should be looked at. But these guys sort of thing. And so if you're a university now, You've expanded considerably over the last 20, 30 years because you've been getting this research grants from the NIH. But now they're threatening to take any of your money away if you don't play ball. And playing ball means you don't talk about ivermectin that decreases death rate by 73%. You don't talk about hydroxychloroquine, dittos. You talk about remdesivir, and you do all these kind of viral, you know, these antivirals that are really not very useful. And you don't ever talk against the vaccine. So that's why the universities are bought. And that's why you have to ask yourself, where's the medical profession in all this? They're watching. How can the university of any state name you want to put in there condone vaccinating children with these experimental agents, these experimental genetic agents that have never been tried on children before? You